Ever wonder, like, when a school hallway just turns into a legal battleground?
Oh, yeah.
Today on the Deep Dive, we're going deep into Taylor v. Roswell Independent School District. It's a 10th Circuit case
Oh, wow.
that really kind of breaks down student free speech rights when anti-abortion advocacy
Yeah.
literally clogged the toilet.
I can only imagine.
I know, right? It's a crazy case. So in this case, we have some students who are affiliated with a religious group called Relentless,
Okay.
and they tried to distribute 2,500 rubber fetus dolls with anti-abortion messages,
Go 2,500.
2,500
Well,
at Roswell High School. And of course, the school put a stop to that.
I would hope so.
They said, no, you can't do that because it caused significant disruptions, which we'll get into. And this led to a First and 14th Amendment lawsuit. So our mission today is to kind of understand the balance between student constitutional rights and a school's responsibility to maintain order. You know, like, how do they balance those things?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Especially, we're going to be looking through the lens of the Tinker Substantial Disruption Test
Right.
and prior restraint doctrines. So this is super relevant for any future lawyer who's going to be navigating these complex issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's dive in. So, you know, we kind of set the stage. We have these students from Relentless, right?
Okay.
They are distributing these 2,500 rubber fetus dolls.
Which, I mean, just the imagery there is something else.
It is. It is. With these anti-abortion messages, this happened on January 29, 2010. So, what kind of disruptions ensued from this activity?
Well, you know, as you can imagine, it was quite a bit of,
Yes.
I mean, first of all, vandalism.
Of course.
These dolls were destroyed, stuffed in toilets,
Wow.
thrown as projectiles. Some were set on fire.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, think about it. A freshman English test actually had to be postponed
Oh, wow.
because students were engaging in abortion-related name-calling. And a security officer actually described the event as a disaster, so you can imagine the scene.
Oh my God. So this, you know, this form of speech, it's very proactive,
Yeah,
right?
very much so, yeah.
It's not like the you know, the passive symbolic speech that we saw in Tinker v. Des Moines, which involved armbands, right?
Right, yes.
These are physical objects that are being distributed en masse. So
It's quite different.
yeah, so that's just something to keep in mind as we go through this. So the students, you know, they're not happy that the school shut this down.
Right.
They make a number of legal claims.
Yeah.
So what were they?
Well, they're saying that, you know, this is a violation of their First Amendment rights, their
Yeah.
free speech, free exercise of religion, 14th Amendment rights, equal protection.
Right.
And they also challenged the school's pre-approval policy as an unconstitutional prior restraint.
Right. So, you know, these are really serious claims, right?
Yeah, definitely.
These are big constitutional issues. So, how did the court respond to that? What was their analysis?
Well, you know, they started by kind of going back to Tinker v. Des Moines, that landmark case.
Right. And for our listeners who may not be familiar with Tinker, can you give us a little rundown on that case?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Tinker v. Des Moines, the Supreme Court basically said that schools can restrict speech that causes a substantial disruption,
Right.
or if they can reasonably forecast that there will be a substantial disruption of school activities.
So it's not just actual disruption, it's also the potential for disruption.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. So how did the court apply that to this case?
Well, they said that the disruptions here were significant.
Right.
They were actual, and, you know, administrators had a reasonable basis to foresee further problems,
Right.
just given the nature and the scale of this doll distribution.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they were everywhere.
2,500. And I love how the court put it. They said, you know, and I'm quoting here, unlike in Tinker, the expression here was neither silent nor passive.
Right.
It involved proactive contact with large numbers of other students.
Right. And then they go on to say the dolls' small size made them tempting projectiles
Right.
and toilet clogging devices.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
That's pretty descriptive.
It is.
So let's move on to this idea of prior restraint.
Okay.
The students also argued that the school's pre-approval policy was prior restraint. So what is prior restraint and why is it a big deal in First Amendment law?
So prior restraint basically means that the government is preventing speech from happening in the first place.
Got it.
And it's a really big deal because it's seen as this, you know, huge threat to free speech, right?
Right.
Because you're not even letting people speak.
You're stopping it before it even happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're shutting it down before it even has a chance to be heard.
Right.
So courts are super skeptical of anything that looks like prior restraint.
Okay, that makes sense. So what about the specific policy at Roswell High, this policy 5195, right?
Yeah, so policy 5195 basically said that students had to get approval before they could distribute anything, any materials that weren't school-sponsored.
So any flyers, any pamphlets, anything like that. Yes, they had to get approval from the school first.
Yeah, if they wanted to hand out more than 10 copies.
Okay, and did the court say that that policy was prior restraint or not?
So this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
The court actually said that the policy itself was okay.
Okay.
Because it had enough safeguards in place.
Safeguards meaning?
So there were a few things. Like first, the school had to respond to a student's request within 5 days.
Okay, so it's not like they could just drag it out forever.
Exactly. And if they denied the request, they had to give a written explanation, like why they were saying no.
Okay.
And then, most importantly, the students could appeal.
Ah, okay, so there's a process.
There's a process.
Yeah.
They could appeal to the superintendent and then even to the Board of Education.
Okay.
So it wasn't just like this arbitrary, no, you can't do that.
Got it.
There was a system in place.
Right. So the court is saying, you know, because of these safeguards, this policy doesn't violate the First Amendment.
Exactly.
It's not prior restraint because there's a process that students can go through.
Yeah, they were very specific about that. They said, and I'm quoting again, it ensures prompt and transparent decision making.
Got it.
Requiring officials to approve or deny a student's request within 5 school days and provide a written explanation of any denial.
That makes sense. So they really are focusing on that process, that there's a fair process in place.
Yes, very much so.
Okay, so we've talked about the free speech claim. We've talked about prior restraint. The students also made a couple other arguments, right?
Right.
They said that the school violated their right to free exercise of religion and also equal protection. What happened with those arguments?
Well, the court rejected those pretty quickly.
Okay.
They said that the school policy was neutral, you know.
The meaning?
Like it applied to all non-school materials.
Okay.
It didn't matter if they were religious or not.
Oh.
It was about preventing disruption, not about targeting religious speech.
So it wasn't like they were saying you can't hand out religious pamphlets. It was you can't hand out a ton of anything that's going to cause a problem.
Exactly. And for the equal protection claim, the court basically said, you know, show me the evidence.
Right.
Show me that you were treated differently than any other group.
Right.
And the students just didn't really have any evidence of that.
Got it. So let's bring it all together for our listeners who are in law school. You know, they're thinking about their future legal careers. What are the big takeaways from this case? What should they keep in mind?
I think one of the biggest things is that this case really shows that schools have the authority to maintain order.
Right.
Even if it means limiting student speech.
Right. And they need to do it in a way that's fair.
Yes. It has to be done carefully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need clear policies,
okay,
content-neutral policies. And if you're going to have a pre-approval process, it has to have those safeguards, like we talked about.
Right.
You can't just shut down speech because you don't like it.
So the process really matters here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, this case didn't establish a whole new legal test, right?
No, it didn't.
It was applying existing precedent, like Tinker and Forsyth County.
Exactly.
So it shows how those precedents actually work in the school environment.
Yeah, and how those principles are applied.
Right. And I think it's also really interesting to think about, you know, student activism today.
Right.
And how this case might apply to online speech.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, what happens when a student posts something on social media that causes a disruption at school?
It's a whole new world.
Yeah. Does Taylor apply? Is it different? You know, that's something for you, our listener, to really think about as you move forward in your legal studies.
Absolutely.
So thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Taylor v. Roswell.
It's been a pleasure.
I hope you found it informative and engaging.
Yeah, it's been a good one.
We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.
Bye, everyone.